Welcome to All About Business with me, James Reed, the podcast that covers everything about business, management, and leadership. What do you get when you mix a love for music with a bold idea to reinvent the party experience? A business that turned quiet nights into a booming industry. Today's guest is Toby Burns, the founder and director of The Silent Disco Company. They now run over 1,500 events a year, allowing groups of partygoers to listen to different channels of music simultaneously. In this episode, we talk about making your brand ubiquitous amongst competitors, the importance of innovation, and what Toby thinks needs to be done in the UK to allow businesses to grow. Well, today on All About Business, I'm really delighted to welcome Toby Burns. Toby is the founder and director of The Silent Disco Company. And I've had the pleasure of going to a silent disco more than once, Toby, so I'm looking forward to asking you lots of questions about it. And on my way to work today, coming into the studio, I thought I wouldn't listen to a podcast on the tube as I usually do, but I'd curate my own silent disco. So I had a variety of genres blasting in my head, and I walked in with a bounce. So I thought that would get me in the right spirit to talk to you today, and it did. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your story, because you started out, I understand, as a children's entertainer, as a teenager, and then you went on holiday to America, and you came across this wonderful silent disco concept, which you brought to the UK. So, Toby, can I begin by asking you, what was the first silent disco you organized like? How did people take to this concept when you brought it here?
It was actually quite a strange one. I was DJing at the time doing sort of corporate, Jewish, Arab, real high-end events.
So what, regular discos?
Regular.
Right.
So had the children's entertaining, probably doing 10 parties or so a week. So
right.
Quite a lot of parties a week.
And so then you did kids in the afternoon and then adults in the evening.
Exactly.
Right.
And midweek I was being picked up with a man in a van from school, from college, going straight to do parties.
Even when you were at school, you were working doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah, so 15.
So you started at 15.
Yeah. Right. Going out, man in a van at 17.
So you couldn't drive at 15, so someone had to take you there.
So you literally had a man in a van called Pete.
So you had a chauffeur.
It's a glamorous way of, with a bashed up van.
Well, someone drove you, yeah. Okay, Pete.
But essentially, chauffeur was driven in this smelly old clapped out van. Went and did these jobs, children's entertaining, lots and lots and lots. And the story behind it was, I really sort of cut back on that because it's a very unsociable job. I missed out on birthdays, on family events, family
occasions.
Because you
were at someone else's. Yeah.
Because people were booking me, especially with the kids stuff, sometimes 6 months, sometimes a year in advance.
Right.
You know, and then I get an invite for a family wedding 2 months before. Can't then turn around to a customer and go, sorry, I can't do your kid's party now.
Well, credit you for that, because I've had people do that to us.
But there's a reputation.
Reputation is important.
And in our industry, you're only good as good as your last job. So I really cut back on that over a period of time because it's very unsociable. And I was doing these sort of much larger productions and, you know, even some weddings or bar and bat mitzvahs, which the spend overall were sometimes exceeding £100,000 in an event for a 13-year-old.
Right.
And I've used an example on another pod, and it was a 2-year-old's birthday.
Right.
And they spent £250,000 on this 2-year-old's birthday.
And the 2-year-old won't remember it?
No.
I suppose everyone else will.
And 500 guests.
Were you an entertainer at this?
I was an entertainer. So I was a very small piece of this event.
Small piece of that £250,000, mate.
But you saw the scale,
500
people. I mean, I don't even know 500 people that I could invite to my own wedding. This was a 2-year-old, but it's in their culture to invite, you know, lots and lots of people that have huge extended families. And I say it's always relative. You know, if you're earning £25 million, if you're worth £25 million, you might spend £250,000 on a party. If you only earn £25,000 a year, you'll spend £250 on a party. So it's relative. But I did see some quite outrageous events where they spent just
But you're mentioning this because you saw an opportunity in that? Is that why?
Yeah, I saw an opportunity.
I mean, it is incredible that people spend that much, but it's sort of interesting as a business opportunity as well.
So I landed in this sort of bar bat mitzvah market, Arab corporate, where I was DJing quite high profile events.
Right.
And not to name drop, but Google ended up being one of my clients. So I still DJ for them 3 times a year.
You're Google's favorite DJ.
One of them.
Right.
And now they have silent disco and everything. But there was a light bulb moment where I used to play five-a-side football on a Thursday. And I actually, on a Thursday, broke my wrist playing football. I just had a bad fall and I broke my wrist. And I remember going to the hospital that night, and I've told this story many times. And they said, we need to put you in a cast. And I said, well, I need to DJ on Sunday. So I'll come back on Monday, because I can't DJ in a cast. I'll come back on Monday and you can put me in a cast.
Right.
And that's exactly what I did. But it was that light bulb moment of going, if I'm not working, I'm not earning. It's key man driven. People are booking me. And I really wanted to create a business and a commercially profitable enterprise, you know, that I don't have to be in it all day, every day. But I knew when I was doing these events that there was a period of time where the adults were eating and the kids finished eating in 5-10 minutes, and then they're causing havoc, you know, because they're bored. And I saw Silent Disco in America, and I still go to America because all the new ideas are there first, or China.
Well, that's what I thought was interesting. Yeah, it's a good way to go there and look for things and bring them over here.
Yeah, and I still do that.
And you do that. That's a business strategy of yours.
4 weeks ago.
So you go to America and China to look for new ideas?
Yeah. So I go to each of them every year.
Right.
And I try and go to as many trade shows as possible. And even if I don't find an off-the-shelf idea that I can swipe and deploy in the UK, I might get ideas and go, I like the look of that. If I adapt it like this.
So I like that. Your business strategy is swipe and deploy.
Swipe and deploy.
Yeah.
And I hope your listeners.
That's an opportunity for anyone listening, isn't it?
Yeah. I hope your listeners, you know, can take a few golden nuggets that they can swipe and deploy into their businesses, because knowledge is power.
Swipe and deploy strategy.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that expression before. I like it. So do you get better ideas from China or from America?
Now I think China, because we're going direct to the factories. We have a lot of our stuff manufactured in China anyway. So I try and, in that week's trip, which I say is my hardest working week of the year.
Right.
People go, oh, you're going on a nice holiday to China. And I go, no, it's relentless. As soon as I land, it's nonstop for 7 days, car to factory, you know, factory
to
car.
So you have an itinerary that's been put together.
Yeah. And it's a hardcore week.
Yeah.
I just took one of our team with me for the first time. I normally go on my own, but we filmed everything for our YouTube channel and stuff like that, because we wanted to give a bit of raw behind the scene. And I said, it's going to be tough. You're going to be tired. We're going to get in. You'll probably have 5 hours sleep a night. And he went, it's not as glamorous as I thought it was going to be. But we tried to have some fun while we were there. But I think most of the tech now we find in China before, or if I've seen ideas at trade shows, we'll go direct to manufacture in China most of the time.
So let's go back to that first Silent Disco. So describe. Where was it? What was the...
The kids are bored, and I thought, right, if we can do a silent disco for the kids or people that had finished eating, we can entertain them while everyone else is having a peaceful dinner without
that'd
the loud noise.
Well, I'd be in, up for that.
So I still remember I basically ordered the kit. It was going to take about 3 months to get it on the sea, get it here. And I'd sold it in to the next 6 months of events before I'd even got it. And I sold the idea. I had bookings in advance. All the kit was already paid for.
So the kit was in a crate coming across the Atlantic.
And I remember, and I still have, I promise you, 10 years on, the same feeling. And I don't go to as many now, but if I do go, I stand there for a minute, and only a couple of weeks ago I was at one, and I take my headphones off, and I still get the same feeling and the same smile watching people in their own little world, as if you're on the tube, you're listening, if you're singing, you're the only person on that train in that moment. And that's the feeling it gives people. It gives people choice. that they can choose what music they want to listen to on the headphone. You're not listening to just one DJ of a song that you don't want to hear. It gives people choice and it's a piece of entertainment. And I still have the same smile on my face watching people. Honestly, they're in their own world just dancing.
If, like me, you run a business or manage a team, you'll know how important it is to hire great people. Over the last 65 years, Reed has worked with thousands of businesses around the world, helping them to recruit and to grow. This is what inspired us to create Reed.ai, your new AI hiring agent. It's here to save you money, to save you time, and to help you get the right match. Whether you're hiring your first team member or your 50th, Reed AI is here to make it easier. Try it free for 28 days, exclusively available during our beta period. Go to Reed.ai and get started. Reed.ai, your higher power.
So it went well. These kids sort of...
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, just sort of loved it.
And it still amazes me now that people say to me, I've never seen a silent disco before. And we've been doing this 10 years.
And yeah, even I've been, yeah.
I've got to ask where you went now.
I was at a friend's party and it was great. And what I remember and what I like particularly is that you have different lights that show what channel you're listening to when you're dancing. So it was red, blue, green.
Green, I think, correct.
And so you can find the sort of people who like the same music as you as well in the silent disco and dance
and
together.
It's fun, you know, like when someone says, you know, turn to blue, turn to green, you know,
because you're really constantly. Good song on,
People like choice, and this really does give you a choice.
But it is funny when you take them off and you just see people, you think they're all mad. You know, it looks very odd.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't upset the neighbours, which I think is probably why they had it, because they wanted the party on late.
Yeah, and I think since COVID, and I talk about this a lot, I think there's been a real shift from nightclubs.
Yeah.
You know, so many nightclubs, so many pubs are closing down across the country. It's very sad. And we did an episode on YouTube of nightclubs that we actually work with that are now putting on the silent disco events.
Right.
And it's given them a new lease of life because your conventional nightclubs are dying. People want to go and see their favourite act at a venue, rather than go to a nightclub and see the same DJ that's there every week. So there's been a real shift in terms of people partying at home, not disturbing the neighbours, than going out to bars and clubs. There's been that real shift.
Right, right. So you were sort of doing children's entertainment originally as a DJ. Can I ask what your persona was? What did you have a name? Or what, I mean, because my stage name, it was a long time ago,
was DJ TJ. Which is a play on my middle name.
DJ.
I perceived to be sort of your cool children's entertainer, not your clown, you know, the magic, the silliness. Yeah. It was more cool. It was more disco games. You know, there was an element of magic, but, you know, fire and illusional stuff just to try and be cooler. And I think the kids then want to be with you on the dance floor.
Right.
Because you know, you're perceived as a cool
DJ. Yeah, when
as
a parent, I mean, you know? You just want the kids to be having a good time so you can chat to the other parents and sort of
see, as a children's entertainer, that was really frustrating when you're trying to perform and the noise in the room is filled with chattering.
Yeah.
But now as a parent, I want 5 minutes peace.
Yeah, well, that's why you were being paid.
I've seen it on both sides, but it is tough when you've got a room of nattering mums.
Yeah.
It's really quite distracting when... Yeah. I just, you know, turn up to level
turn the music out. Well, I suppose when you are DJing, in the old days, certainly people would come up and ask you to play stuff all the time. So I suppose that gave you the insight that people quite like to listen to different stuff to what you're playing. And
people like
choice.
People love choice. I mean, we do a 10-channel system now. So you would have had three, red, blue, green, three channels of music. We do a 10-channel. So you could actually have 10 different genres of music.
Are they all different colours as well?
All different colours.
Right.
For people to listen to. And we do a lot of that for corporate exhibitions, trade shows where they might have different breakout rooms and keynotes. So there's lots of use for the headphones, but people love choice, you know? Right. And I think when you give people choice, it's a form of entertainment, but it also means people don't leave early when, the DJ's too loud.
Yeah.
You can turn your headphone down. Or they're playing a song you don't want, you take your headphone off, you go to the bar, you know, until that song's finished. However, with Silent Disco, it really gives people a choice that you just flick between what you want.
All right, but another view might be that it's taking people away from being sort of together, listening to the same thing, you know, on a dance floor, all dancing to the same tune at a wedding or a festival. Yeah, which people really enjoy, isn't it? I mean, they're all going off into their little worlds, like everyone looking at their phone. I mean, isn't this a concern?
I think it actually is the opposite. And I know I'm biased, but the facts are there.
Go on, explain.
And the feedback is there that actually I think it brings people together onto the dance floor. It brings people along because, you know, at parties, you've got some people sitting at the table eating. They're not really dancers. You know, they like to sit there and have a drink, have a chat. Then you've got the people at the bar. Yeah. That are flicking back and forward. When you've got Silent Disco, I promise you, even the people that I'm told would never get up at a party and dance, you know, they're not those sorts of people. They like to sit there and they are on the dance floor. They are dancing.
So how do you do that? I mean, how does that happen?
The music does it. The choice does it.
They find something they like.
They find something they like. Right. And I think that a comment that always came up in the early days is, well, how am I going to speak to my friends if I've got headphones on? And my view in the early days was like, well, if you were at a club or a party, you've got to shout pretty loud over the music to hear each other. You know, you're shouting in their ear. It's not pleasant just to talk to each other. With this, you just pop your headphones off, have a conversation, pop your headphones back on. You haven't got to shout over the DJ and the music. So I actually think it's more sociable doing it this way.
So you set this business up. You founded this business in the UK 10 years ago, 2015, and you decided to call it the Silent Disco Company, which is kind of what it is.
Yep.
I mean, can you talk me through that? How did you land on that? And why? I mean, I have a view that it's brilliant, but I want you to share why you did. And
all
why.
Of our brand, I'm a big believer in like brands should say what they do on the tin.
Yeah.
You know, and I find it much easier when the name says exactly what the business is. And, you know, there are other companies in the event space. And I think the children
companies in the event space
that really say what they do. And I think maybe it came from the agency as a children's entertainer that I worked for. And they were called, they're still going now, they were called The Perfect Party People.
Right.co.uk.
And, you know, that really tells you what that agency does. We are the perfect party people.
And they used to get your bookings.
And they used to, you know, deal with all the bookings. I got my bookings for the week, 10 bookings, you know, great.
And they're still going strong.
They're still going.
Yeah.
I think at a peak, there were about 16 entertainers. Now they're down to 3 or 4 because a lot of people do it on their own. They don't want to pay that commission. But actually, they dealt with everything. And it wasn't a lot, you know, 20, 30 quid a booking.
So it's worth having an agent in that.
It's worth having an agent. And really when we made Silent Disco, I wanted it to say what it was, which is we are the Silent Disco Company, not any. We are the Silent Disco Company. That was the brand we wanted to be, the go-to experts. We set ourselves quite premium in the market. And that really comes down to the customer service.
Were you the first to do this in the UK at that time?
Yeah, with our particular model of headphones. There were a couple in the UK that were doing festivals.
Yeah.
But they were very cheap, like plasticky China headphones.
Yeah.
And again, the market that I'd come from, which was that corporate high-end market, we needed something premium.
Yeah.
And these sort of, you know, plasticky stuff. So we really set ourselves premium. And then obviously subsequently lots of other companies do similar stuff now. But we really set ourselves as the Silent Disco Company, and all of our subsequent brands over the past 10 years, because we have some different brands in
what are they? Talk me through those.
So we have The Karaoke Hire Company.
Right.
Says what it is. The Screen Hire Company. So we do like home cinemas where you can have an inflatable screen in your garden, have a movie night.
An inflatable screen.
Yeah. So you just plug it in, inflates. You can have a movie night with your family.
Right.
That was a big lifesaver in COVID for us.
Okay, so you've got the Silent Disco Company, the Karaoke Company, the Screen Company. Any others?
And then we've got a couple. We've bought and acquired other Silent Disco companies.
Right, but they're all coming in behind your brand.
They come in. So they've got their own names, not following the same brand, but they all feed into the Silent Disco Company.
Because why I thought it was brilliant, I mean, obviously it says what it does, but by being the first and taking that, you became, you know, like the Hoovers automatically.
The, yeah, you know.
Yeah, the sort of, we were talking this with another guest the other day about becoming sort of ubiquitous in that way. And you gave yourself the name that made that the case. Even before you started.
We've got a great brand. The team works so hard and we're so hot on that, you know. And the thing is, you have to keep innovating. I say this all the time. Like, if you don't innovate, you evaporate. Yeah,
okay, so you don't innovate, you evaporate. I like that. So that's one of your mantras, which I would agree with.
I heard that from another...
Who did you hear it from?
An entrepreneur called James Sinclair.
Right.
Who is based in Essex.
Yeah.
You know, huge amount of businesses. And he always said, and I learned that at 15, 16, if you don't innovate, you evaporate. If you're not innovating, somebody else is. So we might be the silent disco company.
Yeah.
But if we just carry on not innovating, another company will just leapfrog you.
Yeah.
So we're constantly innovating. Even to today, I think that's my entrepreneurial mind. What can we do better?
So what sort of innovations have you sort of, over the 10 years, felt have made the biggest difference?
Certainly in equipment, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, my team get very frustrated, but as soon as we launch a product, even if we've had it R&D'd, made in China, within a few months, our competitors will have a near
people
identical.
People copy you very quickly.
And people copy, which is a great...
Well, it's flattering.
It's very flattering, but frustrating for the team that have put so much work in. And, you know, there's just slight changes to it. But I alluded to earlier, we have a 10-channel system, you know, to give people more choice. Some of our equipment incorporates Bluetooth now. Other companies don't do that. The lights on the headphones, we've changed the headphone again about 2 years ago, 18 months ago, to a new model. It's now got a screen on it. It now tells you what channel you're on in your ear. So like when you've had a silent disco, am I on blue? Am I on red? You're asking your friend, am I on blue? You know, now it will tell you channel one, channel two in your ear. So you know what channel you're listening to. So all these little things are just innovating the product to make it better for the end user.
So that's a sort of continuous improvement ethos.
Always.
Isn't it?
Yeah. You've got to make 1% improvements every day, every week, every month, every year, because they add up. And the karaoke, you know, that was an innovation. Like there's other.
So which is busier now for you, the silent disco or the karaoke?
Silent disco.
Still the main thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're servicing just this week, 220 hires this week.
Separate events.
Separate events. Same again next week.
So how many headphones have you got?
25,000.
25,000 headphones. And you've got to upgrade them every... You've got to clean them as well, haven't you?
Clean them, charge them in a day and a half.
So where do you do that? What are the logistics of that?
With a lot of team.
So you've got a lot of people. Where are they? Yeah, where's the operation based?
I've seen other companies that charge headphones, you know, with a table like this and there's cables everywhere, you know. And we had special racks made that we can charge on one rack. They're all, you know, all the cables are neatly
in. This is one of your innovations.
Yeah, so we spend a lot of money on charging racks, but each charging rack can charge 600 headphones at a time in 2 hours. You know, because we've created the power to be able to do it. So we're innovating. We're even looking at wireless charging at the moment of whether we can save the time of that staff member plugging in each headphone and go over to wireless charging. That's a huge, not only investment in financially, but in time, because we need to retrofit wireless charging to 20,000 headphones.
Right.
That needs an enormous amount of manpower. But the time saving... It is huge. I mean, everything comes back on a Tuesday. So our model, the way we've been able to scale...
Because most things are on the weekend or...
Yeah. And our model, how we've been able to scale is through a dry hire model. So it's a do-it-yourself package. So the party you went to, likely they had that delivered to them via a courier on a Thursday or Friday. You've got it for the weekend. Do it. You know, it's super simple to set up. And then on the Monday, it gets collected again. And it will land back with us in Essex on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, Thursday, they all go back out again for the final weekend.
So you've only got a short turnaround.
So we have a day and a half.
So a pit stop in Essex.
Unbox, check them, clean them, charge them, and rebox them. in a day and a half. And as I said, we're in a very, very busy time of year. June, July, August are our peak months. We're generally busy all year. Right. We do about 5,500 hires a year in total across the brands. But in the summer, we're doing in excess of 200 a week. So we got to turn around near enough 25,000 headphones in a day and a half. So it's a big logistical challenge, but we prepare for it. We get a lot of temps in. You know, we've got 5 temps in this week just simply charging headphones. That's all they do.
So you need a flexible workforce for this.
Yeah, I mean,
you've got peaks and troughs and seasonally and in the week and that sort of... Yeah,
look, we have a really busy summer. We're prepared for that. In the winter months, we do a lot of events. We do with the screens, we do a lot of drive-in cinemas. We have the big inflatable screens for drive-in cinemas. We do big LED trailers for sporting events. So where you see Wimbledon, you see the big screen outside. We do them on the trailers as well. So we're generally pretty busy all year round. But for 10 weeks, we are exceptionally busy.
Is the drive-in cinema something you can set up yourself, or do you have to come along?
They're all with teams. If you've ever seen a bouncy castle, these are 4 or 5 times the size of a, you know,
this sounds really fun. Oh, with a big sound system as well. You must have.
Well, we can utilize sound system or headphones.
Oh, headphones.
So we do a lot of drive-in cinemas. I mean, COVID
you're not upsetting the neighbors.
COVID, drive-in cinemas were a big lifesaver for us in COVID. That was a really difficult time in the space we were in or are in. But drive-in cinemas was like the only thing you could do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we gave headphones, but it's like, stay in your car. Stay in your bubble. Don't open the window. Don't look at anyone. Don't breathe at anyone, you know. But drive-in cinemas were really quite popular in COVID because that's all you could really do in your little weird bubbles at the time. But there we go. That's, you know, the team is really difficult. And I think finding a good
team. The team is difficult in terms of pulling together.
I think for any business owner, staff and team is the most challenging thing. I say to my senior team all the time, the biggest challenge you will have is the team and the staff. I've always found that to be a challenge. Just when you think you've got the perfect team,
one
person leaves again, traveling, or you have a problem you've got to deal with, or they've been off absent for 2 weeks, you've got to fill that gap. So I think team is really difficult. Recruiting is difficult.
Let's talk about this for a minute, because I would agree. I think it's really important to get the right people, and the right people made such a huge difference to business trajectory.
Yeah.
When you say the team, what do you look for in terms of the people in your team? What are the sort of characteristics or skills you really want?
Look, for our senior team, I like them to be a little bit weird, because weird is good.
Yeah.
Creativity.
So weird is good because
they're creative.
Yeah.
They may look at things a little bit differently, which then you can tone down to fit in with your brand. But you want creativity. You don't want yes people all the time. And I'm talking senior team here. And I've had my fair share of bad senior team, and it takes time. It takes experience.
Bad, weird, or sort of
difficult, difficult employees where you got to give them responsibility, and it's what they do with that responsibility. Yeah. But I think for any business owner, it takes a period of time. And I use an analogy of like, you've got to kiss a few frogs before you find your prince.
Yeah.
And with staff, you really do have to, especially our operations manager, who basically runs everything for us. You know, he took a long time to find
So you went through a few operations.
Went through a few that really.
Well, you've got a good one now.
He's very good. He's really, really good.
Well, that's really important, isn't it? The operations.
I mean, we've got a small team, really, and I like to have a smaller team working 100% as A teams than a team where you've got A players and C players. Because what happens is, you know, some people aren't pulling their weight. The A players get annoyed because the C players are working 50%. And then the A players want to leave because they like, you know, competition and that working as a team. So I think it's a really fine balance with a team. Creative for our senior team, our marketing managers, our warehouse managers, you know, bringing new ideas, innovation. You know, not all the ideas come from me. The best ideas come from the team. I think with the sales team and the warehouse assistants, you know, it's a more simplified role. But finding people that want to work and want to graft, I've found increasingly more difficult over the past 3, 4, 5 years. And I think
the recruitment of those people.
The recruitment.
So talk me through that. What are you finding?
I think, one, it's difficult to find good, loyal people. You know, people have a huge turnaround of staff now. And I think since COVID, the whole flexible working element, you know, I'm a firm believer of boots on the ground in the office. That's where creativity comes from. You get the camaraderie, you create the environment that you want to work in. And we're a fun young company. Hmm. So there's always music playing. We're a musical company. We try and make it fun and exciting in the office for the staff. But I've interviewed people where, you know, I will come and work for you, but I want to do 2 days at home. Well, that's not in the job description. We're 5 days in the office.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you do want me to come and work with you, for you, and I'm like, it sounds like you're doing me a favor and yeah, then yeah, me yeah. offering you
So you don't offer
a
people.
Job.
Yeah.
But look, we can.
I think that might be changing a bit now because.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because
is.
People can see that there are fewer and fewer opportunities offering that.
But it's also.
And employers and entrepreneurs want people in more.
But I don't know how you've found in your personal businesses, but the cost of recruiting somebody now, and I don't want to go too political, but you know, the cost to employ someone is huge now. You know, I often say you've got to add 10% if you're offering 30 grand. You know, really it's costing us 36 grand with all the extra taxes and PAYE and the NI and everything like that. It's, you know, it might be a 30 grand role, but actually the cost to the business is 36 with all the taxes that they add on to it.
Well, yeah, the NI is now 15%, so pretty much.
So it's tough to employ good people at what the business can afford to do. And there is, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, a balancing act. And I track my, you know, turnover to labor ratio. That's something we're really, one of the KPIs that we track. And as we said, there's peaks and troughs of the business. So there's a real balancing.
So
it's
you
a real
feel
challenge.
That's really, really under pressure then at the moment, the turnover to labor ratio?
It's under pressure because it's our
And what's
peak
caused
period.
That in your view?
It's, well, we need more. We're in an overtrading stage at this time
right.
of year. You know, we're
so
doing
you need
more
people?
Need more people, but they have to be on a temporary basis because when it gets to November, that will naturally drop down because we're peaks and troughs. We're still busy, but not to the extent that we are now. But that's a challenge for any business, and it's my job to dilute the year to make, you know, to fill those troughs with other businesses. And as I said, we have our photo booth rental, our karaoke, so we've managed to fill those peaks and troughs slightly throughout the year, so the team are still busy all year round.
But do you see a sort of issue around this, though, that in terms of costs going up and people's maybe less keen to come in, that there's a combination of things happening that make it harder to run the business?
There's a combination. I mean, look, we won't go political, but it's making it very, very hard for business owners. And this is why I've got so many friends and entrepreneurs that have moved out the UK now, because I call them turnover taxes.
Yeah.
And 50 to 55% of our turnover goes to Rachel Thieves, I call her.
But we won't go political.
you may want to cut that out. We'll see.
You can say what you like. There's free speech in this podcast.
But I hope that's a nugget that people swipe and deploy. No, you know, but 55% of our turnover goes on different taxes. You know,
55%.
Yeah, business rates. You know, the VAT, the PAYE. We're a rental business. The VAT really hurts us. We're not selling.
Right.
Are buying and selling goods.
Yeah.
We're buying the goods and renting them out. So cost of sales in terms of VAT is really affected, and we have really high VAT returns.
So what would you like to see happen in, you know, not going political, but in terms, you know, if that could be changed in some way, you know, if you had a magic wand, Toby, what would you want to have?
My view is that entrepreneurs or a business owner should be in government.
Right.
And I really do think that a business person, and we won't go across the pond, but I do think that having a business person running the country, an entrepreneur, will be much better for our growth. And I think for small businesses, I'm a big believer in this, tax on profit, not turnover. Let a company who's put all their eggs into one basket, they're starting a company, they've probably put savings, maybe their house on the line, at least make them earn a profit before you take it.
Right.
You know, because I think the growth of that, and I don't mind paying more corporation tax, but tax me on profit.
So it's currently 25%. You'd pay, you think that could go up and other taxes?
As corporation tax, I'd pay 40.
Really?
But tax me on profit and not turnover.
Right.
You know, and I think that's really, really important because there's so many taxes. You've got the, we said the NI, the PAYE, business rates, all of a business, the corporation tax. There's so many different taxes that it's actually in between, for us, 50 and 55%. And when you actually break it down for a business, I guarantee it's around the 50% you're actually paying out, you know, if you're in that top 3% of earning over 250 grand or whatever. And I think a lot of people won't employ people, or they won't go above that VAT threshold.
Yes.
You know, because they're earning more money in their pocket, earning 85 grand, than earning 100 grand.
So they're better off staying as a sole trader rather than creating a business that gives jobs to people. And...
But if we tax people on profit and not turnover, people would take the risk, employ people and grow a business because they're not taking it all before you've earned any, you know, any decent profit. So I would pay more. So I'm also, I'm really passionate about the educational system. And we touched on this in the pre-chat chat, I call it. But I think the educational system as it stands is set up to fail children. And as a child that's about to go into full-time education, I think it's set up for the industrial age still. And you're taught to, you know, go get a job. Go to university, you'll get a job, you'll be in that job 40 years and you'll retire. That doesn't happen anymore, you know, and I'm really a huge fan of AI, and I'm sure you may deploy it in your business. I think we all deploy it in everyday life automatically now. But AI is going to take jobs. And I say, like, even on the doctor front, you could go to uni, train for 7 years to be a doctor. But I do think they'll have AI in a ward monitoring all the monitoring stations. And then you just have one doctor instead of four to check the monitoring to see if, you know, there's any problems with any of them
even
in
doctors,
the ward.
Yeah.
And I really do think AI is going to affect it. So I'm doing a lot of keynotes, or I'm trying to do more. It's the reason I'm doing a lot more podcasts for personal brands, but also as a lead magnet, you know, different team, you know, if someone wanted to come and work for us, there's a big picture of content marketing, as you know. But speaking in colleges, I'm like, go set up a business, because I do think that young kids that want to start a business, and with AI is going to enable people to create a business super quickly, earn money from it, sell the business, and then go again with the assistance of AI. And I don't know if you follow Daniel Priestley at all. Have you heard of Daniel Priestley, the entrepreneur? He talks about it all the time with education. And that even I've used a great bit of AI where I've created apps and websites in the past. Same with you, where you may spend 20 grand, 30 grand on a website and it takes 3 months to build it. AI now, I can literally type in what I want, how I want it to look, what features. And I watch this AI program code me in front of my eyes in 15 minutes, a whole website.
Right.
And these kids and stuff, I do think there has to be some reform in education that the schools teach them how to use AI. It's not going anywhere. We've got to embrace it. We've got to use it to our strengths. It's not all going to be built to destroy the world. There's a lot of good that can happen, and I think it will replace a lot of jobs. So I do think we should be teaching in business studies, in IT, in the technology classes, the use of AI and how you can create websites, create businesses that you can build a business. And I think there'll be a much higher turnover of businesses being created and sold and created and sold, because this industrial revolution, which is what the educational sector is based on, I've got so many friends that have been in jobs like 20 years or 25 years, and then they're just made redundant like that. There's no loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, if a business has to skim the fat. So I think you've got to create your own economy and your own destiny, and AI will allow you to do that. And my 3-year-old daughter, she's 3 years old, and I've got her, maybe silly of me to do so, but I think to have that skill, like these kids can like navigate a phone.
What have you done? We've got her.
Well, like
what?
Kids can navigate phones, yeah. iPads, like a notification will come up on my phone. She swiped it, cleared it. She's 3 years old. And we don't give her a phone or watch TV unless it's the weekend. We're quite strict with that. But at the weekend, like I might get ChatGPT and I'll say, what do you want your bedtime story to be tonight? And we'll find your story. And it was like, I use this example, I want Spider-Man on a jet ski on holiday. So I put it into write me a bedtime story about Batman on a jet ski.
This is a new use of it. I haven't heard. This is great.
And I've literally, and in what, 5 seconds, it's given me a bedtime story about Batman on a jet ski. I've read it to my daughter and she has used her creativity, her mind of not, and I think books are important. She's got loads of books. But for her to be able to use her creativity at 3 years old to create what she wants that's in her mind, and we've got the AI tools to do that, I think that's amazing.
That's a bit like going back to what you're doing with the silent disco. You're choosing your own disco tracks.
Choosing your own, like,
choose your own story.
I never
put it
read
into GPT. And then
I'm a very visual learner. I'm not good at reading books, like ebooks. I'm good at audiobooks. I'm a visual learner. I can remember stuff. Actually taking it in, reading it off a paper book, I find really difficult. So I try and give her that skill because I wasn't good at it. But creativity and using AI, when she is in school, I want her to be taught how to use the different AI tools, because, you know, I do think in 10, 15 years, look where we've come in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And with the emergence of AI, I just think you have to embrace it and you have to use it to your strengths.
So you said you're doing keynotes, that you're obviously devoting some time to this, but what's the key message of the keynote, that schools should be embracing AI or they should be embracing entrepreneurialism or both? Or
both.
Both.
Both. Look, we touch on many things. You know, I say be curious, be different. If you're different, it's a good thing. It's not, but you know, it's almost looked at, if you're disrupting the classroom, you're sent to detention, but your mind's just working differently. And I was one of these. And most entrepreneurs are dyslexic or ADHD, a big majority.
No, that's been a common theme on the podcast.
You know, Elon Musk, he's very weird. Mm. You know, you look at Richard Branson, highly dyslexic. Some of these amazing entrepreneurs have had, troubles
not the best
school
reports.
And they leave school and they go create a business. So when, you know, you are disrupted in school and then you're put in detention or excluded, I think you've actually got to embrace those kids a little bit more because they are different. Their mind's obviously working differently, and put them to use. Don't punish them for it.
Yeah. So flag them as future entrepreneurs and give them a different program which would teach them some of these things.
Exactly.
But it doesn't seem that business people are likely to be running the country, does it? Because there don't seem to be many in Parliament. They're too busy running their businesses.
I
don't know.
The one thing I always find hilarious is a government reshuffle.
Right. Why? Right.
I just find it hilarious. So obviously, you've got the health minister, the finance minister.
Well, I want to find out why you find it hilarious. I'm finding
Let's say you're in a position where you've got a cleaner, a nanny, a gardener, a chauffeur, right? That's like me saying, the gardener, you're now the chef.
Right.
The chef is now the nanny.
Oh, I see.
You know, you're shuffling them all around, but they've got no experience in that particular field.
Yeah.
They're not experts in their field.
No, they're not experts.
So when they do a government reshuffle, I find it hilarious. So they're literally moving the gardener to the kitchen.
Right.
The kitchen to the chauffeur. And they've got no experience in that field. And I really do think that the government should have the expert in their field at the head of that department.
So someone who really knows about health running the health department, someone who knows about business running the trade department.
An ex-lawyer or
Yeah.
You know, the transport minister is now head of the NHS. That makes zero sense from a business point of view, in terms of being an MP, of how they can then run that, you know, to the best of its ability when they've got no experience in their field.
So it's a case of being overpromoted then, or just...
The way it works, I just think is failed.
So it's a failed system. That's it's quite difficult to shift, though. So
it's a failed system. Yeah. But I say to my team, we are our own economy. We can't control what's going on the outside. We can only control what's going on within our business. So we have to create our own economy, create our own environment that we want to work in, and be our own bank. You know, don't rely on the bank. Be our own bank and decide what we're going to do to grow our business, because we can't rely on what happens outside. And although, you know, across the pond, there are many things that are wild and people don't agree with, you do have a businessman running a country who's ran multiple businesses very successfully. And I think he is going to make a positive change for America in a business sense. You know, you look at the facts and figures coming out, he's making a difference. So I do think that we should have, you know, entrepreneurs that have retired or, you know, chairs now coming into government to really help. And you've got loads in the Lords, but I think you need them at the head of the tree.
They should be brought in more from the Lords. Or the Lords is underused, maybe.
Yeah. And I think they've got to be brought in.
They talk about reforming the Lords, but that might be one useful way of doing it, that the departments use those people more.
But I think there has to be a shift there, because I think, you know, lots of people are moving abroad. We opened in Dubai in 2023, so we've got a very small operation there compared to the UK. But I think when I opened that, I was just, at that point, so frustrated.
Really?
With all the taxes, I was like, well... I knew quite a few people who had done it.
That was the last government that frustrated you, and now this one as well. So.
Yeah.
sort of feeling frustrated.
You know, we all thought the grass was greener. You know, many of us may have shared that view.
There's not much grass in Dubai.
But it's certainly not greener, and obviously there's talks about October with further tax rises, and I think that's really going to hurt the working people. And, you know, I class myself as a working person. I graft every day. So does my team. So does my wife. So I think it really does, it will cause an effect. And I just think they've got the strategy wrong in that respect. If you want to have growth, so many people I know have left. So many. My brother-in-law left for Dubai. He's opened his business out there.
Right.
I know just so many people leaving because it's not attractive. Right now.
No, and that makes the situation worse because there are fewer people to tax.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of, it becomes a bit of a doom loop if we're not careful.
It's a real problem that I think may be addressed in a couple of years at the next general election and you give someone else a go. But I really do think it comes down to if you can put some business-like entrepreneurial people at the top that know how to run a business, how to skim the fat, really be profitable. I think that would make...
Yeah, when you look at the huge scale of public expenditure and you think, you know, if you're running a business and it's making a loss or heading in the wrong direction, you look at how you cut costs and you might take 5% off or 10%, but I mean, it might be hard, but you can do it. I mean, you put your mind to it and you do it. But it seems like in this space, it's just, oh no, we can't do anything.
No.
We'll just have to take more tax. Well,
yeah, but it's like us going... We're not as profitable this year, so I'm going to raise our prices 30%.
Yeah.
And our customers, you know, going, hold on. Like,
I'm not going to
We're happy
you
with
anymore.
5%.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always on the customer, and that's always on us as the public to take the hit. Well, actually, no, you need to skim the fat, be more efficient, have someone business-like that can be more efficient, a bit like the whole Elon Musk going in and trying to be there efficient.
Yeah.
That was never going to work. That was like a...
Well, he's gone back to a failed marriage. To Starlink, which is doing quite well, I think. From all accounts.
I think it dropped again. But it dropped again, didn't it? Because he's going to open his own political party.
Oh, is he?
The share price in
Tesla
dropped right down
I'm a Starlink customer. I think that's a really good series.
I should do that because I live very...
If you live in a remote place like I do in Wiltshire, it's really good.
I have looked at that. So I will. I'm a big Tesla fan anyway, being a customer. But Starlink is a great bit of kit.
Maybe it's an amazing business. Yeah, amazing business. So I would agree. I would say if I was asked, if you could do one thing to improve the situation, it would be make the UK the best place to start and build a business in the world. And you have a fighting chance of attracting people and creating the wealth that we then need to spend on all these other services.
Yeah.
But if you just keep squeezing the orange that's there, it will run out of juice and you'll just be left with a few bits. And that's no good at all.
I
need to plant orange groves by bringing in new entrepreneurs.
I could move abroad. And a lot of people have said, would you go to Dubai? We have a business there. And it's not for me. One, that heat. I love the heat, but that's another level of heat.
I'd say.
But I could.
I've been there in the summer. It's very hot.
Well, China a few years. That was bloody hot as well. But I was, you know, I say I could move, but I'm a big fan of UK business. I think we have incredible stuff here. We've got an amazing financial hub. You know, I just drove past Canary Wharf. It's buzzing. We've got a great financial hub. We've got an amazing law system as well, believe it or not. You know, we've got a great law system and systems and processes in place. We've got the core right here of a great, great country for business. But if you just keep taxing people so they don't have money to spend, there will be nothing left.
I think that needs to be the goal, to make it a great country for business, because that's what creates the wealth. And, you know, I've got other ideas around philanthropy companies where a certain part of the shareholding is held by foundations that can then be spent on social community causes. I think a lot more can be done. I mean, Britain was and is a trading nation.
Yeah.
It's always thrived as a business nation. And if it's not going to do that, not much left for it to do.
Well, we don't do much import-export, really.
We're not
a huge manufacturing company. I think there's so much potential, but I just wish, you know, we gave the incentives. And I use an example from China, you know, because I'm a big fan of China. Okay, some of their ways are a bit strange, and people think they're spying on you. But actually, in my opinion, they get a lot of things right. And one of the things that I just find fascinating for businesses is any company that does a trade show or an expo, any goods they export from that trade show, they get a 1% rebate off their tax bill from the government.
Right.
So they get a big pat on the back. Well done. You've done a trade show. You've exported goods. Whatever the value of those goods are that they've exported, it's 1% of those goods off their tax bill. Just that tiny incentives. You're growing the economy. We'll give you 1%.
That could be quite a lot of money when it comes to it, though.
You know, that. And I think, well done. You know, what if we did that here on exports? We're not a huge exporting country. Mm. But those little incentives for businesses to actually want to do it, want to grow, want to export, want to make more money, if they were just to get something back rather than taken, it would make a lot more people do it.
That word incentives, I think, is key to this. You know, we as business people know that you need to make sure your team is motivated and energized around what we're trying to do. And that's a really important part of it, have the incentives right. We're always looking at how to improve and tweak them. And there's not enough thought around that, I don't think. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
So I like your expression, you know, we are our own economy. I once met a man, an amazing man called Jeffrey Langlands, who was a teacher. And he was a teacher in Pakistan, in northern Pakistan, and he had been a soldier in the Indian Army, and after independence, just stayed there because he didn't have a family in England, became a teacher. And I remember him saying to me, he said, well, you know, Pakistan might be in a lot of trouble, but my bit of Pakistan, namely the school he ran, that's going to be really good. And listening to you talk about, you know, we are our own economy, your business, reminded me of that. You know, we have control over a certain amount of things that we can make really good.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's going on more widely. And I was thinking about that and what you're saying. I was thinking, you know, if you were to go back to the beginning when you started out, is there anything you'd have done differently? How you approach things you think that would have made your economy better or you're going to do now? What's on your mind, Toby?
I think experience gives you knowledge, and the knowledge is ultimately power. I think I didn't listen to a few people early on. And one of the bits of advice I was given, and I listened to one of them, was the first people you should hire is a bookkeeper and a PA.
Right.
And I got the bookkeeper. That was my first member of staff. Didn't have anybody, but I did have a bookkeeper because I didn't want to chase invoices. It was boring and a waste of my time when I can be bringing in sales. I hated all the admin-y side. So the bookkeeper did it. The PA I only got about 3 years ago, really. So 7 years into the journey. And I wish, looking back, I did that earlier. And someone told me to do it earlier, another entrepreneur.
So why is that?
Because they give you time.
Right.
They give you time back, which now is precious time that I could have had at the beginning, which I now have. You know, can you deal with this? Can you deal with the electricity's up for renewal? Whatever it might be, she will do it for me. And it gives me all that time back. Insurances, you know, we have so many different insurances. That's another tax, that the IP insurance premium tax.
Mm.
Another crazy tax on all of our insurance, so adding it to our list. But even insurances, I could spend an hour, you know, doing comparisons and getting all our fleet of vehicles insured. She does all of that. So it gives me, and that's just a very small part of what she does, but giving me all that time back means I can focus, or a business owner can focus their energy on growing the business or getting sales. So I never use the word regret or anything. These are all...
No, these are learnings.
These are learning and experience and knowledge. But I do wish that I had a PA earlier on, because I would have had more time to maybe grow quicker or in a different way, or just had more time to do other things. But I'm very content that, you know, some business owners want an absolute monster of a business, you know, 50 million, 100 million pound exit, and they've got VCs involved, you know, they're scaling huge with other people's money. And some people want to do that. Some people like a lifestyle business, you know, that gives them a really nice lifestyle. They can go on their four holidays a year. And I'm somewhere in between, that I've never borrowed any money apart from for properties. Everything has been self-funded through the profits of the business. And I always had a rule from when I started that 50% of the profits would go into property and 50% would go back into the company, whether that's new products, R&D, team. You know, they're the biggest investment is your team. And that was always sort of the rule in my head. That's what
You choose that rule? Why did you want to put money into property?
So from a really young age, and I touched on it, 15, 16, I always surrounded myself with very successful people. And there's a book by Jim Rowe, which you may have read. And he always said, you will become the average of the five people you surround yourself with. So if you surround yourself with five pro golfers, and you're rubbish at golf, after a period of time, you will become better at golf because you've surrounded yourself.
As long as you're playing golf with them rather than in the pub or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big golf fan.
But you were getting a lot of it. This is an interesting insight for a 15-year-old to have.
So I surrounded myself with ultra successful people.
Where'd you get that idea from, that book?
No, that book I only read a few years back.
So what made you think at that early age that
because you aspire to something.
This is really good advice for people listening.
You know, if you see someone with a nice car, you go, how did they get that? What do they do? Maybe our entrepreneurial minds, I always think we are wired up a bit different to most people. You know, the minute we wake up, to the minute we go to sleep, we're thinking about business. We are wired up differently. And not everyone can just be an entrepreneur. You're wired up different. So, you know, I would see aspirations. You know, I'd love to have a, you know, by the time I'm 40, to be that secure and not have to worry for my children. I'm 15. I'm not thinking about children yet, but I'm already thinking, planning for the future. And there's a common trend, in my opinion, with every entrepreneur that I've met, uber successful entrepreneur. They all have vast amount of property from my from my experience.
So you saw these older entrepreneurs when you were 15 had accumulated property.
They've all got property. The real wealth is in assets. And I say for a business owner now, if you don't own assets, I think you're screwed with how the government are taxing you. I think if you don't own assets for long-term wealth, you need it for stability and, you know, for wealth, essentially. So, and a lot of these...
So this is like your insurance, in a way.
Insurance,
going into property.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I don't want to be working till I'm 70.
Right.
You know, really. I'm sure as an entrepreneur, I'll be dabbling in lots of things till I drop.
Yeah. I think entrepreneurs are like artists. They never really stop.
But, you know, the real hard graft, you want to be able to be in a position, if you wanted to go on a 30-day cruise, whatever it might, you know, tickle your fancy. And a lot of these entrepreneurs had, some had residential, some had commercial, and I listened to lots of advice. I talked to these people. I want to know. I want to get all this knowledge. Knowledge
so
is
just
power.
So when you're 15, you just say, will you
ask
be
questions.
A, will you have a chat with me about what you do? Or that's, so you went.
Even
you
now.
Went, yeah.
Even now, if I meet someone really successful, I'm asking as many questions as I can. You know,
well,
how
that's
you
what
do?
I'm doing on this podcast.
You know,
week after week,
we are getting nuggets of information,
and you're sharing really interesting insights. I always ask two questions at the end of my podcast. The first, there's a clue on the wall. The first is, and this is important to me, is what is it that gets you up on a Monday morning?
What really gets me up, and I think happiness, you know, the definition of happiness changes throughout a business career. And I think at the start it's money, you know, money's going to make me happy. And then you soon realize as time goes on, money doesn't make you happy. It gives you opportunities, but it certainly doesn't buy happiness. But I think family, and it sounds cliche, but family does get you up in the morning. You want to support them, give them the best life possible. But I also tell my wife, I could work from home every day. I don't like golf. I could spend 2 days on a golf course and go in a couple of days a week. But I am up. I'm out the door at 6:45. I walk the dog. I'm in the office by 8:30. And I love being there with the team. The team get me up in the morning, as well as family or my daughter jumping on me. But I like to go into the office. I like the creativity, the ideas, the problem solving. That excites me. I don't have to do it. I have a team there. But I genuinely love going in. And I think as long as you love what you do, you'll get up in the morning and go to bed late because you're living and breathing what you love doing.
You'll love Mondays if you love what you do.
Yeah. I love a Monday because it's a new week.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do I want to achieve this week? I almost do a SWOT analysis on a Monday of like, what were the threats last week? What were the opportunities that we can work on this week? A Monday for me is a reset button. Okay, we've got 5 days, not a lot of hour, you know, we're
sure,
in the
office
8 hours a day. We've got 40 hours. What can we achieve in 40 hours of work this week in the office? I mean, I do stupid long days still, as any entrepreneur does, but what can we achieve as a team? And I think Mondays are a reset button. Just to look at last week, look at this week, have a plan, make those 1% improvements. And then the following Monday, you'll be 1% up on last week.
Exactly. I like that, the reset button.
Yeah.
And then the last question is from my book, Why You 101 Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again, which is an interview book we did 15 years ago now.
Wow.
No, that's not correct. An interview book we did 10 years ago. It's had several editions. So this question is one of the fateful 15, as it's described, and it's, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Oh, such a... Have you had anyone say, like, on a beach somewhere?
Well, you can say that.
Yeah. No, I would be very, very bored. I would love to be, you know, these baby steps I think are important. Uh-huh. We'd love to be in our new unit, much bigger unit. We're working on some businesses ideas at the moment, new ones. And I have an idea of turnover of where I want that to be in 5 years, because I think business owners really underestimate what they can do in 5 years and overestimate what they can do in one. So we tend to do our business plan in 5 or 10 year stints.
Right.
Because I think that's really important that the business owners, you know, really do overestimate what they can do in a year, but underestimate in
that's
10.
That's something you've observed.
Yeah. So we go, right, if we've got something to work for in 5 years in terms of a turnover, then we can work that backwards. What do we need to do year by year, month on month to achieve that? So we have some targets in terms of figures that we want to be at in 5 years.
Well, if you grow your turnover at 15% a year, you'll double it in 5 years.
Yeah.
Which is doable, isn't it?
It's doable. We want to go a bit further than that.
You've got bigger ambitions. I'm pleased to hear it.
And if I use my sort of, my view of buying a property once a year, by 5 years' time, we should have another five commercial units. There we go.
Very good. Well, I wish you every success with that, Toby. Thanks so much for coming in to talk to me today.
Thanks
really
for having
me. The conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Toby, for joining me on All About Business. I'm your host, James Reed, Chairman and CEO of Reed, a family-run recruitment and philanthropy company. If you'd like to find out more about Reed, Toby Burns, or the Silent Disco Company, all links are in the show notes. See you next time.